The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Now I'm joined in studio by Craig Hughes, the political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, and we'll start with that paper, the front page there. Undercover Gardaí met tragic Evan before shooting, and there's quite a lot about that story inside the paper. Front page of the Sunday Independent, tax cuts and hike to living alone payment are a budget priority. The Business Post, exclusive PTSB investors High Court bid to block the sale of that bank. The Sunday Times, Ukrainians will get Irish payoff on return home. And another intriguing story, Beijing spying tried to court Ceann Comhairle, according to the Sunday Times. And much more within the papers. Craig, what has taken your fancy this morning?
Yeah, well, good morning, Pat. Well, I suppose it's hard to get away from Fianna Fáil in a lot of the papers.
100 years.
Exactly, yeah. And we're coming up, of course, the next week we'll have the centenary of events and, of course, the party's annual Ordesh. Talk has died down a bit this week in advance of that, of challenges to Taoiseach Micheál Martin's leadership. He was saying this on the Independent today that, you know, he has a full mandate. And the rebels within the party have I guess, lowered their voices for now, I suppose, until we have the next bit of turbulence that might spark that off again. And interesting to see an interview with Minister for Social Protection, Derek Leary, seen as being one of the front runners to succeed Micheál Martin, saying in that newspaper that, you know, he's not getting into any discussions on that. But interestingly, he will make a decision on that if the vacancy arises. So not ruling himself.
He's kind of the quiet man, isn't he?
He is. But I suppose what really brought him into focus during the fuel protest was a sense within the party that they were losing touch with rural Ireland. He's obviously from Mayo, holds the rural affairs portfolio as well. Broadly liked across the party, very much a man of rural Ireland. So that's what kind of brought his position into sharp focus there again. And of course, previously a deputy leader of the party. Mm. It's an interesting time for Fianna Fáil, and we see with the government the talk of the budget already beginning. And also from the Taoiseach as well in that regard, not ruling out tax cuts, talking about not ruling out extending excise. And I suppose they're being forced into these early discussions on what they're going to do in the budget because of the persistent calls for an emergency budget by the opposition, by the squeeze that people are feeling around cost of living. And they're being boxed into kind of making these early promises.
In the meantime, you get a massive overrun in the HSE.
And of course the Department of Education, and this is something I was writing about a couple of weeks ago. So Minister of Public Expenditure Jack Chambers has told all government departments now that they're going to have to pay for the overspending of their colleagues, which has caused quite alarm.
And there is a problem here because they look every month at the tax receipts and they are burgeoning. There's loads of money and yet they're being told you can't have more. And the reason is they don't want to embark on spending that will have to continue.
Yeah, and so we know that spending is going to increase by about 6% a year. So that's the plan, at least. It's already higher than what the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council want them to do. So look, there's lots of risks if you go beyond that long term, but also in the short term when you come to inflation. But it was interesting talking to a few cabinet ministers about this in recent weeks. They're kind of saying, hold on a second. One government department overspends their budget and the rest of us are being penalised. So doesn't that create a kind of a perverse counter-incentive not to stick to your budget if you know you're going to be bailed out by your colleagues?
Yeah. Other parties in the headlines, I suppose, you in your own paper, The Mail, Sinn Féin will pay for failing to make hay while the sun shines. Now, what's that about?
This is Gerard Colleran writing in The Mail on Sunday today, and I was making a similar point to my own column in The Daily Mail yesterday that, you know, at a time when there is, you know, growing unease with the government, the largest opposition party are really struggling to capitalise on that, you know, in Galway West.
Every time we say this, they'll say, but we are the biggest party, 25%. And if you add the other two, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, together, they have a comfortable majority over us. But we're still the largest party.
And they are, but they're shedding support. I mean, if you go back to 2020, the general election, they're on about 24% of first preference votes. That slid to 19% last time out. And I think they have a real issue, Sinn Féin, in terms of the identity of the party now. And I think the by-election in Dublin Central will be very interesting because if the Social Democrats candidate Daniel Ennis wins that election, you know, all of a sudden they'll be saying, hold on, this left unity business isn't very beneficial to us, is it? And it'll be interesting to see in the context of Gerry the Mon Coach, if he could outlast Janice Boylan, the Sinn Féin, the Sinn Féin candidate, and then some of her transfers are suddenly going there. Well, then all of a sudden the party will be kind of eaten from both sides, the traditional working class vote, but also from the soft left vote that it's spent years trying to court.
And Gerry Hutch quoted in your paper, if I'm elected, I'll give my TD salary to people in need.
Yeah, well, it's one of the few policy measures we've actually heard from Gerry Hutch, who have the unusual ploy of not having any policy measures during his campaign, other than don't vote for any of the government parties or Sinn Féin. So yeah, a novel choice by Mr. Hutch, who of course claims to be a man of the people and of the inner city, but of course has lived in the leafy suburbs of Clontarf and the more warmer confines of Lanzarote for most of his time. So there's of course the big conflict there. He's a bit unusual, different this campaign to last. He seems to be out actually more at events. He's been making videos outside the Children's Hospital. The path to getting elected is obviously much more difficult for him in a by-election than it would be in a general election, but I do get the sense that this is more of a long-term project for him, and that we could see him on the ballot paper again in the general election if unsuccessful here.
Mm. All right, moving on to British politics and obviously the local elections on the island neighbouring us have made all the headlines over there and some headlines here. Sir Keir Starmer calling on some old allies to bail him out.
Yes, former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, in the young age of 75, has been drafted back in as a special envoy, as is Baroness Harman, of course, the former minister as well, to another advisory role. He's facing into another extraordinarily difficult week where his leadership is expected to be challenged. We'd one backbencher saying that she intends to agitate for a leadership challenge this week. Now, I suppose for Keir Starmer, he's managed to kind of falter through a series of scandals and controversies, you know, be that from the most recent one, Mandelson, and of course, then of course with these devastating local election results. He needs to really stem the tide here. It's 3 years out from a general election. A lot can change then. He inherited, I suppose, a very difficult set of public finances that were always going to take time to turn the tide on. But there doesn't seem to be patience within his party for that. So this is going to be a very monumental week for him. He's expected to make a significant address tomorrow. Will he last till the end of the week? This seems to be a recurring question in British politics when it comes to Keir Starmer.
I mean, so many prime ministers in a decade, if he's replaced, it'll be seven in 10 years. I mean, it's getting towards banana republic territory.
And I suppose that should be a point that he's making, that, you know, there, at some point there has to be continuity. We have to actually try and get something done, you know, and with any big leadership change at the head of government, it creates another couple of months of change and people, things have moved around again and very little actually getting done.
Now, Farage as PM in number 10, a lot of the commentary is saying, well, as we heard from yesterday on this programme, that it's all very well for reform to make gains, but when you look at the collective will of the people, they look at Farage and they say, no, thank you.
Yeah,
and so it'll be anybody but Farage in terms of a general election.
And he's only as recently as this weekend, he was still saying that he wouldn't do a deal with the Conservatives. Now, you know, I guess he's saying that until he isn't, you know, and we'll see how the numbers come on that. But he still has a long way to go. But it has been a meteoric rise for Nigel Farage, from someone who was literally a joke for a long time, and seems to be Teflon. Nothing, no more than his friend Donald Trump, that nothing, no matter how big the controversy, it doesn't seem to stick to him. I mean, this is the man who is the architect of Brexit, that has caused untold damage to the British economy, and here he is being triumphant as the next potential Prime Minister. I mean, it beggars belief.
Now, in all the newspapers, obviously the hantavirus is featured. Now, events have overtaken much of the coverage because the ship has arrived and it's moored off the Canaries, a small port, not a very busy port, but it's busy this morning because you've got all these little small boats to take the individual passengers off. They'll be ferried to the dock and then they will be taken straight to the airport where aircraft, among them the Irish government jet, I presume, is waiting to take the people home.
Yeah, so I just got a push notification just before we came on there that the evacuations had started. And as you mentioned, this will be a very strict kind of precision, almost military style operation to get people off the boat. They'll be segregated small boats, but brought straight into an area and straight on to chartered planes to bring them back to their country of origin, where they'll have to quarantine for, we're told, 42 days. Waiting to hear whether that will be in a government facility or whether they'll be able to do it at home. And it really will bring to an end what I'm sure has been a holiday from hell for a lot of these people trapped on the boat that's at sail, first of all, on the 1st of April, and has sadly seen, I think, three of the people who were on board sadly die, and eight people contract this
disease.
I mean,
the problem is they probably feel like they're sitting in a petri dish of infection where, you know, it can grow and grow and grow, and more and more of them might be infected. But Luke O'Neill was on with us yesterday. He's written again in the Indo today about this. It's not going to be the next SARS-CoV-2 plague. It's not.
No, and even the World Health Organization were at pains to stress that yesterday, that this is not, we're not back into the realms of COVID and all of that, that it just does not spread in a similar way. You need kind of prolonged contact. So hopefully this will be the last we hear of this virus. But I can't imagine how difficult it's been for those passengers.
We got this text in yesterday, which I read yesterday, but I think it's worth reading again from a rather cynical listener. I'm very worried about hantavirus, particularly the way it has rapidly mutated and spread like wildfire through the newsrooms of the UK and Irish media outlets, resulting in an unprecedented mortality rate for hard news stories such as ethnic cleansing in Lebanon, the ongoing illegal war in Iran and associated impending economic Armageddon, and the continuing genocide and starvation of the people of Gaza, just to name a few of the essential world events subject to a pandemic of distraction by our utterly amoral and compromised media class.
Yes, well, there you are. That's because we get our checks from George Soros, who tells us what to say, of course, all the time. Yeah.
All right. Just harking back to the UK and what's happening there. Do you see any possibility of a contamination from what's happening to politics over there, and Farage predicting the demise of both the Tories and the Labour Party, and what might happen to our big parties here?
I don't think we can think that we are immune from the rise of such populism. And I think, you know, we saw a bit of this during the fuel protests. If you delved into what some of the people associated with those movements were saying, there was this real undercurrent of some of those tropes that Farage would use, you know, the anti-immigration, for example, and not really based in any fact. It was all very, very much a motive, because people are feeling the pinch, and you will have people trying to capitalize on that. And I think we have seen some kind of cross contamination with some well-known agitators, particularly when it comes to anti-immigration, who are very active in the UK, who try and then coalesce with similar agitators in Ireland to try and amplify this anti-immigration message. So look, I think people do need to be vigilant, and I think that there is always the potential for some.
I mean, there's a kind of a general political lesson that they should learn from this, and it's where they procrastinate. Mm. And for years and years on the various programs I've been doing, saying, look, you've got to have a proper immigration system where people come in, and if they are genuine refugees, they're welcomed. If they are not, if they're chancing their arm, they're processed quickly and rejected, and so on and so forth. And they delayed. They knew this that the problem could only get bigger, and they didn't do it. And now they're struggling to put something sensible in place.
Yes, I think in the Irish context, for example, I think there has been a real shift under Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan, where you see that immigration is no longer trending as the top, one of the top issues when people are asked about it. The UK have a much more challenging situation that they failed to get on top of, and of course they have the issue of being much closer geographically to France, and we know all about the small boats and things like that. That is a big issue there. Where it goes from here, we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. A few things. The Stephen's Green protest yesterday, not a huge protest by all accounts, according to the Sunday Independent. A chance of corporate greed ring out at Stephen's Green redesign protest.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that, I passed Stephen's Green most days on my way to work, that I can't understand this redesign for what they're going for. And I'm not one to step in the way of modernising, but it just seems to be bizarre that they want to take...
I mean, the centre is Marmite. People either love it or hate it. Mm. It doesn't work properly internally as a centre. Now, whether it could be effectively redesigned within... I mean, there's a nonsense car parking situation where you might go into the Surgeon's car park and end up in the Stephen's Green car park. You know, it's a peculiar thing. You can cross from one to the other, I think, on the fifth floor or something like that.
Okay, well, as someone now who cycles in and out of town, Pat, that's alien.
I haven't used it for years, but I know at Christmas time, for people who come in to do Christmas shopping, it can be a nightmare to get in and out of. Comment, as ever, an assessment of Sinn Féin with no Sinn Féin rep there. Last week it was Mary Lou was finished. Please try to cope with your bias. This is not what we do on this particular slot. We invite generally a journalist or commentator in to find stories in the Sunday newspapers.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, to your listener, you know, the fact that the prospect of the party leader not being able to get their candidate over the line will be very significant for the party. Now, look, she could prove us all wrong and Janice Boylan could romp home. But if that doesn't happen, I think it'll lead to very serious questions within the party.
Another one here. Sinn Féin in the last few years have gone from populist jumping on the migrants bandwagon and not calling out the ports being blocked by farmers and contractors. So that's their dilemma, isn't it? Where do they stand?
Well, I think this goes back to after the 2020 general election, you know, when they had that really soar in popularity, they were on this kind of march. They thought they were on this kind of march to power, and they didn't want to take positions on any of the controversial topics. They did really kind of try to stay out of the immigration debate for a long time. And similarly, on other key areas they tried to stay in the middle of the road. And of course, the old political cliche, if you stand in the middle of the road long enough, you'll get knocked down.
Very good. Well, Craig, there's lots in the papers. Why did it take 3 weeks to raise the alarm about the hantavirus? Good question. Well, they were all at sea and they didn't really know they had it, did they? Yes. It takes maybe up to 6 or 7 weeks to incubate. Now the ivory trade's been uprooted. Elephants need more room in the Sunday Times, and retribution looms for Orban cronies. We shall wait and see. Craig Hughes, who's a political editor with the Irish Daily Mail, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.